cortisone based preventative inhaler, which is actually works quite well.
Yeah,
especially if I'm not going to get.
Thank you for coming back on time. Right, now the committee, I think you're well briefed on the matter, and it's your opportunity to raise questions, issues. Right, Honourable Luyenge, Honourable Mantashe, Honourable McPherson, Honourable Hill Lewis, followed by Honourable Mkongi. Honourable Luyenge.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first appreciate this elaborate report, which has really assisted us a lot as public representatives. The questions that one have are questions that relate mostly with the plight of the underprivileged, especially artists, with regard to their traditional indigenous and appropriate knowledge, and also getting that registered, ripping up something out of it, which is not taking place now. Chair, our artists, they die like paupers as I speak. The issue of the 80-20 theory, the producers, the companies, and the artists themselves has killed the industry. It's good that there is this intervention, Honorable Deputy Minister, that the intention of the department is very clear through this policy, and we need to assist the department at our constituency level through our community-based organizations, like the partnership that I had in the previous presentation, the partnership with Conralesa, but it needs to be extended more because all these aspects are not known by the rural communities and it affects them most. An artist has to go to Johannesburg to be seen on TV, only to find that he or she gets nothing. It's only the attire that you'll see him wearing. He or she doesn't even have a car. The question that I have, Chair, is the one that relates to the royalties for songs that are from the Bible and hymns. Who benefits out of those songs? There are artists who are singing songs that are contained in the Bible and using the Methodist hymns. Then secondly, slide number 23 with regard to SABC having submitted a report on the payments of royalties, but one payment have been processed. So I need clarity on that. What is the meaning of this? Many royalties have been paid. A report has been given, but the actual payment only went to a single person. That the meaning of this statement. Yeah, otherwise, Chair, I'm very happy with this kind of knowledge that we get. Because the monitoring and evaluation cannot be the baby of DTI alone. Communities must be aware. At our level as public representatives, we must assist. Because once the policy is implemented, during the progress of the work, you need to monitor. And then we evaluate later through your reports and all that. But you can't wait for evaluation if you did not monitor. So I just need clarity on those aspects, how to register the indigenous kind of traditional and appropriate knowledge, as well as the hymns and Bible songs. Sure.
much, Honourable Mantosh.
Chair, I'm a bit covered because my concern was how do they do their advocacy for those rural people. You know, I'm so sumdo itala kodwa ngeke uyikhuphe icala kuye Comrade Deputy Minister. Those people in the rural areas do not know what you're doing. They have no idea. And I've heard you saying you intend opening an office in Cape Town, but you're not saying in East London, you're not saying in Queenstown. But why is that? And again, your partnership with only traditional leaders for me is not enough, because we are the people who have constituencies in those rural areas. And we must look into how do we work together to make this beneficial to the rural people. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mantosh. Honourable Matali. Sorry, Honourable MacPherson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to go through, there was quite a lot spoken about in terms of the, you know, the global competitiveness report and how South Africa is doing quite well. But what I had a couple of problems with, and I think that we need to address it, because South Africa's actually gone back one space. If one looks at the competitiveness report from 2012 to 2013, we had gone back from 52 to 53. And in the report, it makes some very interesting observations, which I think that we need to note, and the entities need to note, because it gives some very important lessons that we need to understand, and I just want to just bring it up. And I'm just going to just talk to the points where it signals a problem. And it says, but the country's strong ties to advanced economies, notably the euro area, make it more vulnerable to the economic slowdown and likely have contributed to the deterioration of fiscal indicators. Its performance in the macroeconomic environment has dropped sharply from 69th to 95th. Low scores for the diversion of public funds, 99th, have perceived wastefulness of government spending, 79th, and a more general lack of public trust in politicians, 98th, that's us, remain worrisome. And security continues to be a major area of concern for doing business, 109th. It goes on and it lists another more problems. But at the end, it gives a solution. It says, raising educational standards, making the labour market more efficient, will thus be critical in view of the country's high unemployment rate. And I think that when we talk about doing business in South Africa, we can't just look at it from a point of view of, you know, how easy is it to open a company or how easy is it open to a bank. And Chair, you'll recall that this is something that I've been speaking about for some time, is how do we bring other ministries into contributing to improving our effectiveness in these sorts of reports. And clearly it's not just up to this department, but it's up to other departments, and that's really where we need to see an engagement. So I think while there is good work amongst the entities that fall under this department, we really need to continue to broaden our engagement across different ministries. The report from the CIPC, it was an interesting report because it would seem that my inbox on my laptop and the report for us don't sort of match up, because I get complaints on a daily basis from people that are battling to have their companies registered. However, I do want to say that I've been very impressed with Rory's handling of the complaints that I have sent him. They've been dealt with very diligently in a speedy manner. However, you know, it's one thing to be able to register a company, and you get a number. You can even do that through FNB now. But the problems with businesses that are registering is that they need to register names, and those are hugely important. No one wants to do business with 123XYZ. They want to do business with a name that has some form of name and recognition. But also, what's also critically important is the ability to open up bank accounts through tax clearances and being VAT registered. You know, for businesses, being VAT registered is hugely important. And that can take months and months and months. I know businesses that are still struggling to get registered with SARS and get tax clearances. So, you know, once again, we need to have further engagement across the different platforms in government so that it's not just the IPC that's doing their job, but that the receiver of revenue is also coming to the party and allowing businesses to start up and get going in an efficient manner, because that hinders their ability to access to capital. And finance and the ability to access finance is hugely important for new businesses. Those are a few comments of mine, and I'll be happy to get some engagement on them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now can we please have Honourable Hill Lewis?
Thank you very much, Chair. Now, I want to pick up on that very important point about engagement with other departments as well. I mean, this is a constant theme in trade and industry, but my colleague referred to SARS, which is obviously very important. The other one that's very, very important is the Department of Labour for workmen's compensation and UIF registration and SDL registration. And if you actually look at the ease of doing business report, specifically on starting a new business, South Africa has actually gone down by 8 spaces over the last year, from 56 to 64 or something like that. And when you actually drill down into why that's happened, you see an improvement in the CIPC registration, you see an improvement in the SARS registration. SARS is reasonably efficient, notwithstanding the comments that my colleagues just made, but you see a huge decline in companies getting responses from the Department of Labour. And so again, as DTI as the DDG, it may be worthwhile to just bring all of those departments involved in business registration together to try and speed up that process even more. Then I wanted to say one thing about SAMRO. I've had some experience working with SAMRO, and my experience indicates serious problems there. With another hat on, I'm involved in organizing party rallies and events, and you have to pay SAMRO for the rights to perform songs at party events. And unless you actively follow up with SAMRO to get them to send you the invoice, they don't bother sending invoices. You've actually got to proactively say, please send me the bill so that I can pay you. Otherwise, you just never get it. Then I wanted to say something about runners at the CIPC office, what it called or referred to as runners. It seems that this is, I haven't gone to the CIPC office to see this for myself, but I get many, many complaints about people saying that when you go to the CIPC office in Pretoria, in Sunny Park, these folks outside who will offer to do anything for you within a matter of hours for very substantial fees, you know, 500 Rand on top of the additional fee, the normal prescribed fee, obviously, 500 Rand to sort this document out, 1,000 Rand to sort that document out. And it's clear that they have relationships with staff members in the CIPC that they are going to directly, getting this paperwork sorted out immediately, and I would assume they split the proceeds. And so it's illegal, it's corruption, but it seems to be happening on a absolutely daily basis as just something that's normal, par for the course. So I'd like to know what the CIPC is doing about these so-called runners outside, and how we're working on getting rid of those. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, Honourable Mkongi.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. No, firstly, I would like to welcome the presentation from the department and other entities. I just have a few questions, Chairperson. One is on slide 15 of the report. On corporate governance and the development program. You speak there of the trainees that are placed on board as observers to prepare them for future board positions. Well, I'm not sure whether you can have that information here now. I want to know on the people that you have placed already since this program, how many are black people of those trainees? What is their age category? Whether they are 65 years and above or they are below the age of 35. So give me the demographics. And how many people with disabilities in the program since the inception up until today? So if you have it now, maybe you can help me on that question. And when I'm talking about black people, how many black people and young people generic I would be interested to know how many Africans and how many colored and Indians, the generic description of black people in the South African context. That is the first question. And then when you go to, I think it's slide, but it's talking about the company registration turnaround time. I speak about 11 days on average, one day. I want you to break down this. You have broken down there, but seemingly there is no full understanding again whether by doing this is there any progress. Because here in Parliament we have been hearing in and out that there is a problem of doing business in South Africa because it takes long to register a company. But you have came with, but that question still comes. So I thought maybe the chairperson in future will give us time to get this into detail because it's being asked time and again. So in that turnaround time, the registration of cooperatives. Because cooperatives, they are complaining about the burden that they found it themselves, the cost of registration. Now they are new, they do not have upfront payments. I always like to make an example of first-year students at universities, the burden that they have to register at universities, because you can get NAFSAS when you are in the university. But the application fees process and other related things, the registration fees is not counted there. So what do we do about the cooperatives, particularly from rural areas? Chairperson. Right. Chairperson, the last question.
Are you still there?
The last question, you know, I was fascinated sitting here, I was laughing, because the department is reporting about the progress they are making on intellectual property rights, how do they protect people, and so forth. But in the same vein, they are reporting that their information is robbed by lawyers and other intellectuals and go and give advice to companies. They steal information from you, they come to you and take the intellectual property that you have and use it for their own benefit. What is the correlation between what you advise our people about their intellectual property right, whereas you can't even protect yourselves? So I want further explanation. What are you doing about that? The information, if they are coming to you for an advice, and then after that they advise companies, you know, about that. So I want you to further explain that to me. I still have, maybe I'm going to have another round, Chairperson. I still have some of the questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much on that. Yes, I just have a couple. The point was made, DDG, that there were 76 requests for exemptions or applications on the social and ethics. I had a look at who got them and who didn't get them, etc. Some of them anyway, the applications that were handled by the tribunal, but that is perhaps possibly something a little different. Could we get a breakdown, if you can't do it now and you can give an overview this morning, can we get an absolute breakdown by Friday, because we're closing off tomorrow, on what were the reasons for these requests? Why did they want to have an exemption in the first place in this particular area? The other point is here in terms of the, well, it's actually a positive point. I noticed you've got a schedule somewhere, is it page 33, where we introduced, as you know, business rescue, and I see there the number of liquidations have actually stopped or gone down quite dramatically, and the number of business rescues have correspondingly gone up. And this would appear to be a good thing, but what is the cost of business rescue, the process itself, and the set aside, what would that mean? Thank you. So it's over to yourselves, the first bank of questions.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the committee. I think the team will respond on some of the details that members are requesting. On the issue of the plight of the artist and so on, I think the issue there is that already there is a bill that will be coming before Parliament to look at issues of royalties, issues of the needle time, as well as the issues, I think subsequent, once that has been passed, you will then be able to decisively deal with all the unspent money at SAMRO and so on to try and ensure that you attend to the issues of artists. That issue of needle time is very important because it will then help when you play a particular artist, there is a ratio that they use that is linked to the amount of money that you should be paid. But over time, that has not been happening. Money has been paid to SAMRO. SAMRO has not been paying it off because there was no law that protects artists. As a result, many would have died without any benefits. And this law is a law that should be supported to try and ensure that you can deal decisively with that issue. Obviously, once the bill has been passed, we must make sure that they are in the budget speech that we had. We did indicate that we are going to take a keen interest in ensuring that we do an outreach. So I will be sitting with the department to ensure that we do an outreach. We go to the most remote areas because some of this talent in the South African music and so on comes from the most remote areas, so we'll have to go to those areas so that they can get to understand the bill, its implication, and how it can potentially assist them or take them out of the situation that they would have experienced. So we'll do that, including massive outreach campaign on issues of anti-piracy, because it's one big problem that kills these artists. Because if you find if you see amount of piracy product, they will never make money. So we'll need to do that campaign vigorously to ensure that we can protect our artists. So a lot of work will be done. We'll be drawing up a program of action. We'll be looking into the budget and align them so that most of the work that the department does not end up in Pretoria, in Cape Town, and other major cities, but also it goes to the most remote areas. So as we said, it's going to be business unusual. So we'll take them to the most uncomfortable places as political leadership in the department. I think that covers some of the issues, but the department will further elaborate. You see, the other issue that was raised by other members, I do agree that government need to cooperate so that it's much more efficient, because the fact is this particular unit within the DTI could be reporting factually about improvements on one aspect of the entire business cycle, just registration. But because there is no coordination, you find that the country as a whole will regress on other areas. So basically what it means is that you need to have a seamless approach. Now, one of the things that we've already been talking about, even in the cabinet committee yesterday, is to say how then do we use the government cluster system, the economic cluster, to then begin to raise this issue so that you get everyone in the cluster to respond to these issues. Because issues of DTI, registration of SARS, of labor and so on, if they are not streamlined, you are not going to be able to provide seamless services to our people. So those are some of the improvements that we'll have to suggest to make sure that we're able to record progress, but also draw best practice where we're doing well, because the fact that we are not doing well on other end, we are doing well, like this department is reporting that in terms of doing business in South Africa, we saw the statistics here in comparison with some of the BRICS countries. Relatively, we are doing relatively better in comparison with other countries, but we could do better if we create that seamless services. I think the other issues the department should be able to pick up because they are very specific, and then they can take them up. Thank you, Chairperson.
With your permission, Chair, thanks to the Deputy Minister. Chair, obviously the agencies will then respond specifically to the issues that were addressed to their activities and operations. But, Chair, I just want to go back to just maybe allude on the one of the ways that we intended to utilize, which was discussed in this Parliament as well, to say on Indigenous knowledge, there's going to be a need to also be on the ground where that is happening. And, Chair, one of the initiatives that we had was the field workers, to place them in the rural communities so that we do not just have offices in the towns where people still have to commute to go to towns. So it is in addition to the other programs that we have, other outreaches that we have in terms of the national presence that we have through offices that we have either through CEDA or whatever the offices of government that we have, because we're trying to ensure that where there's a government office, it must provide more services than just one thing, so that when people go there, they get the assistance. But in addition to that, we identified the tribal council offices as the appropriate area. So what we decided to do is that we will roll out that project to ensure that in each tribal council office, there is an official of the DTI that will assist with registering companies, creating a co-op, starting from that area to facilitate that process up until the end, but also specifically to assist the communities to protect the indigenous knowledge, the recordal process, to facilitate it with CPIC and all of that. We actually put that initiative to preempt exactly the legislation. But then what we obviously understand is that there's more needs in the communities, so we cannot put a person just to deal with one thing. So we've allowed the field workers to help the communities on all of these aspects so that they can also be very close to the communities. So, Chair, we also hope that this project can be expanded, because those offices, in practical terms, if you go to those offices, the tribal council offices, there's no equipment, there's not even a computer. So what we do is that we place a field worker there that has got access to a laptop, which can connect with everything that we have in the DTI, and then so that we can facilitate every aspect, whether it's registering a company or whatever. They can help community members in their own villages without them having to travel too far. So we're hoping, Chair, that with the necessary budget, we can be able to roll it out, but we think other departments can actually work with that. The Department of Cooperative Governance has also been expanding its field workers project so that we can actually place these individuals there. We think that there's going to be value in that space. And, Chair, just in regards to the coordination, when I spoke about the ratings, I have indicated the challenges that have been alluded to. And we are very mindful of those challenges. And yes, I think honourable members are correct. We need coordination. The department, yes, has been working on that. Even, Chair, you'll recall that in regards to IPEP, just implementing the actions under IPEP, we need so much coordination. So there is a team that works on that. And then in this particular case, when we focused on the doing business study, we did sit as regulators within the DTI. And then we decided that there should be a platform where all of us as regulators should come into the party in all departments. And CPIC has been coordinating that process where the regulators should commit to improving all of those areas, because the ease of doing business is not registering a company. If you just register a company but you cannot have an office space, it is not good enough. It must be from the beginning to the end. You know, it must be the whole process. So when we talk about turnaround time, it's turnaround time not because you have got a registration document from CPIC, because that is not going to help you if you don't have your licenses, if you don't have those other things. So CPIC is coordinating that a process with the other regulators to commit exactly to the turnaround times, so that we can then improve the ratings on all of those critical areas that are identified in that. And I think, Chair, if we focus, I think, on that, we'll be able to achieve, I think, better results going forward. And you know, in a particular year, we may go back a bit, maybe 1 point. In another year, it depends again on how many countries are also surveyed at any given time, and then what are the factors that they've considered, in, you know, what was the focus and so forth. But I think what we are comfortable with is the consistency that we have, but we need to improve our rating, especially in those issues that I've alluded to that are a concern throughout. Chair, I think I'm going to leave the rest of the other questions to the regulators. I'm not sure who's going to start, but perhaps it's better to start with the company's tribunal to address some of the questions that have been raised by yourself, Chairperson, and then we'll move to CIPC.
Thank you, Chair. The question in terms of why did the companies want exemptions, I don't have the exact breakdown, and I will provide that on Friday. But just to say that the main reason is that the companies would indicate that they have a similar structure, or they have a structure that could serve the same purpose as the SE, as the Social and Ethics Committee. That's one of the reasons. And the other reason would be that the company believes it will not be in the best interest, in the public interest, sorry, to have an SE committee. But I will provide more detail and in terms of the breakdown of the issues. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yes, Ms. Luden.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the first question about the offices, we currently have an office in Cape Town, and I think we've had it for quite some time. So we've had only two offices as CIPC, one in Pretoria and one in Cape Town. So we're adding another office to Joburg in Johannesburg, and then we are also planning to open three facilities or facilities in three further provinces this year. It's going to be a rollout strategy that's going to be extend, I think, over a period of time, because one of our biggest challenges around self-service terminals is who would be the right partners for it. We know that we need to provide support to people to be able to use the terminals, and there is also the Department of Home Affairs has some concerns about just bringing on board any partner because of the biometric verification. So we're in discussion with SARS at the moment about the possibilities in that. But so I think we need to work through what the possibilities are, but the plan is definitely there to make this accessible to people all throughout the country. Then there was another question. I think the question on the different ministries or the coordination amongst agencies is a very important one, and one that we've been working on for some time. We've been in discussion and in sort of work streams with SARS for the past 3 years. Now, we've done some quite important things around just ensuring that the data exchange is there and that the infrastructure is there. So at the moment, when you register your company, we feed that information through to SARS and we get a tax number back. So the tax registration is there. The VAT registration is not so easy to do because of the amount of fraud that SARS has seen, especially with new businesses in the VAT area. But they are very aware of it, and I know that they're looking at it and they're trying to streamline and simplify that process. We are looking with SARS, we have a series of projects. The project that we're prioritizing at the moment is the integration of the registration part. So not just the tax registration that already exists, but you should be able to register your company through SARS as well. And then we need to look at the VAT registration. I'm also very pleased to be able to say that we met with the UIF. When was it, Rory? Yesterday. And we have agreed yesterday that we are going to integrate as well in a similar way as we are with SARS at the moment, so that we'll need to work through the logistics of it. These projects take about 6 months to a year to be able to conclude. But the idea is that when you register with us, we will send the information to the UIF and they will send us back the number. So we will be able to give you all that information. And the Compensation Commission, which is, I think, where the workmen's compensation is, we are about to have a very close relationship with them as well, because one of our colleagues is moving to the Compensation Commission, and as part of our goodbye, there was a commitment, certainly on her part, that she's going to be working very closely with us to try and get this implemented. I know Rory spent quite a bit of time with them already trying to further that. We also have there was a project that was initiated by regulators, and I think the DTI has played quite a critical role in it, the Business Registration Reform Project, which we're having a meeting with all the partners again in early August, and we'll bring the UIF into that meeting as well, so that we can really consolidate where we are and start delivering the results. The issue about names, I think what's important to understand, that the issue that the DDG raised was that you now have the choice to register a company without a name, and it is a choice for a business. What used to happen in the legislation is that you were not able to register until you had an approved name, which meant that if you didn't get an approved name for a year and a half, you couldn't register an enterprise. Now you can register an enterprise and obtain a name later. And DTI very kindly removed the fees for people, for entrepreneurs, for that first transaction. I don't think that our process is as smooth and as quick around name changes as it could be. And that certainly is a focus area for us. I want to just talk about two things. The one, I'm sorry, is that about that? We'll certainly take the issue with SAMRO up about the invoices, and we'll raise it with the CEO. Runners, that's the issue I really want to talk about as well. When we implemented the changes last year, what we did is one of the big changes we did is we closed the front office on the campus in Sunnyside, and we opened up a smaller office in Sunny Park where people can actually be assisted directly. So that did change the dynamics on the campus and around. But these intermediaries depend on this income, I think, and they find very innovative ways of inserting themselves in processes again. In Sunny Park,
just
we have
a minute. Is it Sunny Park and Sunnyside?
Yes. The DTI campus is in Sunnyside. And in Sunnyside, we also have a shopping center called the Sunny Park Shopping Center. And we have an office in the Sunny Park Shopping Center, and our back office is on the DTI campus. So we created a separation. Every time there is a backlog in, for example, company registrations, there are always opportunities for people to fast-track processes inside and also for people to make those claims outside. So I have received some complaints recently about particular individuals in the organization, and any allegations or complaints about that need to be substantiated because we do investigate them. However, I do want to say that I don't think that the problem is a huge problem in our organization. I think there may be a few individuals. What these agents do on the outside is they make promises, they allege that they work with people, and I know that because I've actually walked around and interacted with them not knowing who I am. So they, what they do know is they know our processes very well. So they know exactly how to get a company registration in one day. So I'm not discounting the issue, and we are definitely dealing with issues of corruption. We need to have the specifics, and we encourage people to give us those specifics. But we also investigate a lot of cases where our staff actually had nothing to do with it, and it's people on the outside who've taken money from people, not provided the services, taken their company names and then registered companies in their own name. So we think that there's a huge need to educate people just about how to transact with us and what to watch out for. So I think the last point I just wanted to make was the issue about cooperatives. The registration of a cooperative right now is a purely manual process. Well, let me put it like this. We capture the application when we receive it. There are two ways in which you can get an application to us. You can email it to us, or you can drop it off or post it. We are introducing the same process that we've introduced in the companies area for cooperatives. So it should make the process more efficient, but it's going to take us probably about 3 months to be able to implement it. So there's a process in place right now. It costs 215 Rand to register a cooperative. So it's not a huge fee. What else did I want to say about it? But currently with cooperatives, the problem with cooperatives is that the numbers that we see, that we receive, varies. So we will receive a steady number, and then in 1 month we will get double the amount from KwaZulu-Natal or a province once there's been a drive. And then that will result in slower processing for that period until we've worked through it. Because we have a limited number of staff, we have a certain number of staff, they have norms, and then we do put in place processes, we can pull people into the processes, but generally when we see these spikes, the turnaround times become longer. So our service delivery standard for cooperatives is 21 working days. Rory, could you just answer the question on business rescue?
Yes. Thank you, Krishna. Chair, on the question on the cost of business rescue, I think you will recall that when we were drafting the Companies Act, it was also a bit of a hot topic regarding the issue of the fees and whether we should regulate the fees or not, which then found its way into the regulations in that we do regulate the fees of the practitioners. But what we do see very, very often is that the business practitioners, based on whether they are senior in this type of work, will then negotiate with the company in terms of what they shall charge. We have seen some serious exorbitant amounts being charged and some complaints being given to us. So we as a CIPC currently are dealing with the whole issue of how do we add more conditions to the license of the business rescue practitioner, which gives us, the CIPC, the ability then to regulate them better. And the Commissioner and I were just having a discussion on the way over here, is that we've started the whole process of adding to the conditions that we currently give in order to look at timelines, in order to look at when the reports are given, whether there are any forms of extensions of time and all of that, which didn't currently exist with the current conditional licensing regime that we have. So we as the CIP take it very seriously that we want to play a bigger role as far as a business rescue practitioner regulation is concerned. And even in this space, we are going to motivate also to possibly add some additional regulations in the Act in order for us to get some power as far as this is concerned. This has certainly been a very hot topic with the Specialist Committee on Company Law, in the sense that they see this as quite an innovation in terms of our Act, and therefore they want to see it work and regulate it accordingly. So we are playing a very active role in that. We have seen courts also providing judgments on removals of business rescue practitioners, which we then effect. We've also seen, for example, on our own accord, where just by simply looking at the media, we've seen some business rescue practitioners themselves being liquidated. That's actually quite a strange thing. And then we remove them from our registry. The other question you asked, Chair, was what is set aside? The setting aside is when the business rescue is challenged in court. For example, an affected party will possibly pass a resolution. There are two ways that a company can go into rescue. One is that there's a court application and the court then grants an order, and the other way is where the company itself passes a resolution by an affected party, a shareholder or creditor. And if those are then challenged in court, then the court will set that resolution aside in the sense that the business rescue is null and void. That's what that indicates is.
Just a few others that have not been addressed. I think let me just indicate that the statistics on the corporate governance training we will provide by tomorrow. But I can assure the Honourable Member that the Africans are in the majority, and it's all females, with one male exception, which is the the project manager in my office who attended the training. But the training was specifically focused to enhance the representation of women as well in that. But we'll provide the statistics tomorrow, Chair. Chair, there's also one area that you raised. I think Simpiwe should just cover that. I think it was raised by the Honourable Member about who owns the rights to the songs from the Bible, and it goes back to also the traditional songs, Chair, which was discussed during the Indigenous Knowledge Bill that we were processing at the time. Chair, I'll allow Simpiwe to respond to that, but before then, because I just want to see if we've addressed all of the issues. In regards to the clarification on slide 23 around the SABC payment of royalties, what we were trying to communicate in that slide is that the report that we received from the SABC is that they have paid all of the royalties that should be paid, the ones that were outstanding, but there's only one entity that they were still negotiating with because they were disputing the percentages. And as soon as that is resolved, then they should be able to pay out on those ones as well. So that kind of progress for us is what actually wanted to monitor so that for the collecting societies to pay fully to the members, they also rely on the money that they should be getting from the broadcasters. So that was the money that was outstanding for a number of years, I think dating from 2006. So at least there has been significant progress in that. And then the other thing, Chair, that you alluded to was what we have also noted as a success in terms of the statistics for liquidations. Immediately when we introduced the business rescue mechanism, the liquidations went down, and that is what we want to sustain. However, that is why I said that the specialist committee, through the leadership of Prof. Katz, was also looking at why are we still having liquidations within the ones that have already come for rescue. Let's analyze that so that we can also assist so that these liquidations are actually avoided at all costs. So we are really happy about that progress, Chair. I'll hand over to Simpiwe.
Thank you, DJ. Thank you, Chair. With regard to the question on the royalties which are paid for church song or biblical songs, in this case, you would have a song written by a church member, maybe for the Methodist Church. The church member would now have passed away,
and 50 has expired, then therefore the whole copyright has expired. It's in the public domain. Where the author is still alive, you find that they come up with derivative works, and then the arrangements with Sampro, depending on if they are done genuinely, they would arrange with Sampro, so royalties will be paid to the originator of the work. But mostly you find that the performers would come up with derivative works of the original song. So they don't do it the exact way when it was written or the way it's sung by the church. They would include dance moves, vitorize it, so you end up with a derivative work, so which is protected via the Copyright Act and the Performance Protection Act. So the performer now gets to enjoy royalties on the derivative work. The original work is acknowledged that belongs to a particular church or individual. But cases vary, it depends as to how it's been done with that artist and the church, if there are agreements in place. So where songs have expired then, if they're in the public domain, anyone is free to use them, but not in their pure form. In the pure form, so it's you wouldn't be creating anything. So in order to claim copyright, you must come up with something which is new, and it should be original, and it must be reduced to material form, or even it can be intangible in terms of performances. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that explanation. Look, DDG, we do still have some outstanding questions that members would like to raise with yourselves. Members, over to yourself. Yes, Honourable Mkongi, Honourable Hill-Lewis, Honourable Mtali, Honourable Luyenge. Right, in that order, starting with yourself, Honourable Mkongi.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we need to welcome the answers and explanations from the department. They are very informative. But some of them, they are raising follow-ups questions. Thank you very much. One of them, I would like to understand, you spoke about the rescue practitioners. Why is the department outsourcing this function? Why this function is done by some people outside of the department, and then the department provides them with funding to do that job, you know? Are they applying to the department, or else there are practitioners outside who are dealing with this function? Can't this function be done by the department to have a unit that deals with this rescue issue of the companies? Secondly, the lawyer's matter is not yet answered. The lawyer's matter, that seeks information from the department, and in turn, they go and advise other people and get a lot of money out of the information. I know that information is free from the department, you know, it's for the public. But is it legally right for someone to use that to solicit money somewhere, that information of the department? I think the last one is if in the process of rescuing and so forth, there are court cases and proceedings, especially in the process of liquidation, who pays for those court cases? Is it the department that pays the process when people are taking you into a litigation on the problem that they have in a particular company? You are there most to save as a department that particular company or to rescue it. So who pays if people are taking you to court because of the proceedings that are taking place there? I think the last question is on the issue of the programs. Did you have these programs before, or is now that you are going to be having these programs? One, the DM spoke here about the programs to go to rural areas, education and outreach program. Did you have those programs before, and what is the impact of those programs since you have introduced those programs? Lastly, is the creativity and innovation. I just want to see whether there are things, many things that I see on TV, of many people in rural areas who do innovation. Where is that innovation? There are many people. Someone came with the radio. I don't know how did he do it. In a rural area in KwaZulu-Natal, deep down, and he was, you know, servicing a particular community. You know, he established a radio system from a pondowoki in the yard from his home. So what? Where are those people? Can we have a statistic that tells us that how many South Africans have came with innovation and what happened to that innovation? Because I'm worried of people here in South Africa that are having innovation is taken and processed somewhere in England or in America and then is sold back to us, you know? So what happened to that innovation and where is it, some of them that we have produced so far, let's say 5 years ago, where is that information?
Thank you very much, Honourable Mkongi. Honourable Hill-Lewis.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to ask about the Protec extra transaction that failed and has now resulted in the liquidation of Protec and the destruction of a lot of jobs there. I've only followed the case in the business media, so I don't know as much detail as I'm sure you know, but what fascinated me was that the directors of Protec valued the company far more than it was obviously worth. Now, you mentioned that you also commission your own valuation, share price valuation. Is that valuation published to the shareholders of both parties? It's interesting to me that the shareholders chose to accept the obviously overinflated valuation of their own directors if they had the information of your valuation available to them. And then the other fascinating thing about that case was how in its final year of operation, I'm just remembering from the media again, I think they made about 15 million rand in turnover and then paid their chief executive 7 million rand of that 15 million. That's not profit, that's turnover. Now that's appalling. It seems like an obvious case of them trying to take as much as they can get quickly when they know the company is about to collapse. Does your board have any role to play in that situation where you can see this obvious asset stripping taking place when a company is really on the ropes, and what can be done to ensure accountability for that?
Very much, Honourable Hill-Lewis, Honourable Maile, Honourable Mtali.
Thanks, Chair, Deputy Minister and DDG and your delegation. Mine is around the business rescue. Just to have an understanding in terms of the type of businesses that are involved, the sectors and the breakdown per province.
Thank you very much. Honourable Li Yenge.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. It's only one question, Chair, and it relates to the 30% produce that is being made and internationally. They get 70% out of our own. So what is the meaning of that? Does that mean we don't innovate, as Honourable Ngunge said, about the innovations that exist in the country and not registered? And then, or are we copying some work that has been originating or that originates from elsewhere? You know, at one stage I heard over the radio that the prominent Kwaito song, Waitu Kucha, was not originally composed in South Africa. It's from elsewhere, Zambia or Zimbabwe. So it means there is money that actually went there. I don't know how much our own artist did get. So what is it that can be done? Is it as a result of non-registration of the local product, or it's are we copycats, or is that the name of our own people? They don't want to start things afresh. We don't want to be innovative more than is supposed to be. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Luyenge. Honourable Montash, followed by, did you have your hand up?
No.
No, Honourable McPherson, I think, put your hand up afterwards.
Thank you for taking my question, Chairperson. My colleague, Honourable Hill Lewis, picked up on something really important, which I think has the potential to be abused, which is business rescue or the opportunity for that. I know a case of point in KZN where a gentleman had a financing business, and I know this because it affected some of my family members that had invested in this business, and he all of a sudden started, the business started to shake. He applied for business rescue, but at the same time was the business was being stripped of its assets, movable and in cash, and it was just being relocated into another business to start doing exactly the same thing. Now, you know, business rescue has a very important role to play, and I know of a number of companies that have successfully gone through business rescue, and that normally comes about because of poor cash flow. But what we can't allow is it to be used as a vehicle to continuously move money from one business to another, because that's currently what is happening, I believe. And I don't know how we get around that. And I think that, well, one such idea that I have is that I think that this department needs to have more of a hands-on focus. And while I might not totally agree with my honourable member to my left about you know, the practitioners being in-house, I think that the department has a bigger oversight role to play in business rescue, as opposed to just sort of seeing it from a, you know, from a holistic point of view. And you know, these sorts of entities are incredibly important, and when they fail to act or fail to be involved from the very beginning, we have devastating consequences. And a prime example of that is the 699 Rand scam. You know, when I saw that, and I saw that on the back of someone's car, I mean, I just knew that there was, you know, trouble coming. I mean, you ask me to take something to say you can drive a car for 699 Rand. I know what my car costs every month. It's not 699 Rand. And that's something that I think that we, as a department, should have intervened in earlier. Because, you know, that old saying that something, you know, that is too good to be true, you know, usually is. And so I think that, you know, we have a vast ability to regulate, and I think that we do that well. I just don't think that we use that ability, those regulations, to the maximum effect. So I'd just like some thoughts around business rescue and how we can start tightening up those loopholes.
Thank you very much, members. And this time back to yourselves, DDG. Minister?
No. Thank you very much. I think, look, there is always an issue between striking the balance, you know, when you are responsible for portfolios like the DTI, you are encouraging entrepreneurship to take place. Some amongst opportunities will come from the DTI itself. So let's not look at it in a negative light, the fact that some lawyers will see a business opportunity and exploit it. The question is whether or not there is value for money. That is on the issue of outsourcing. So I think for me, that's how I would look into it dialectically, to try and create an understanding that we have that responsibility, on the other hand, to create and support businesses. So if some of the processes are such that they can better be performed outside efficiently in a much more cost-saving way, So be it. So we'll have to balance that. I think obviously on the issue of the abuse of the business rescue, the department will have to be vigilant. I'm sure when they talk to us, one of the things we'll expect is to be vigilant, is for the process to be such that we can differentiate between those who require help for commercial purposes on those who have seen an opportunity to abuse. The case that you are versed with is a sheer stealing of money from an enterprise. So I think we'll have to find a way of ensuring that our systems can talk and speak to those issues so that we can avoid issues of utilizing a very good intention of helping businesses in distress to the extent of the process being abused by those. I think the question that is posed by Member Luyange, for me, the issue of patent has not been that prominent in South Africa. I think that it can play a major role to change the mindset and the balance of 30-70%, because, you know, in America, everything is patented. In South Africa, you can come up with an invention now, we are casual about things, you know. We don't go to the level of that detail. So I think that maybe, for me, the question is, how do you use the system of patent to ensure that at least we then change these percentages around so that all our invention in South Africa are protected through laws of patent. So I think that should be the approach. But the department, I'm sure, can give us some more issues around that. But the rest, I think the department can answer, because, look, the attitude, maybe as in conclusion, is that whether the program of outreach and education has been there, the issue is we now must upscale it so that it can reach as many people as possible. Many people don't know what DTI does. Maybe if you go down to even CCRD, people don't even know, you know. And yet there are a lot of stuff that are happening there. One of the major breakthroughs that would have followed through the media was the issue of the credit bureau. It was an excellent piece of work, but people are still confused what happened there. And those things are still have to be taken to our community so that people can understand and appreciate the impact of the work. So the department will answer whether or not they've been doing it, but what the point I was raising is that we are going to upscale those things. We are going to have to look for budgets in the department to make sure that it becomes part of how DTI will interact with stakeholders and communities and business people. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. DDG?
Chair, I'll just request the executive forum, the TRP, to just respond to the questions that and comments that were raised by Honourable Hugh Lewis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the issue of lawyers really obtaining advice from the TRP and then packaging it in another form, it is one of those the common practices which we encounter, and I suppose it's also not prohibited in terms of our laws. It's a free enterprise. It's where a particular entrepreneur is able to do a thorough research and then package that particular information and then on-sells it. It is a common practice which happened from time to time in various industries. And from our side, we also notice that because of such research, we are able to actually gain some experience as to how effective our laws are. In certain instances, what we find is the lawyers themselves advise us of certain deficiencies. It's only once they try to apply the actual legislation that we find there is actually a deficiency which could then lead to a particular amendment which will serve the general public in a better way. I suggest we should not discourage such a practice. should be welcome because it also benefits us as regulators. So on the issue of project, I must say the project matter was one of those hostile transactions which kept us as regulators very busy, and it also led to sleepless nights. But unfortunately, the end result after a year or so was almost a failure of the company. And I think this is one of those issues where you find there is a failure of corporate governance. I must point out that as a creature of statute, our powers are limited to a particular set of circumstances. For instance, in the Protect matter, our powers are limited to the extent that there is a takeover. And once a takeover has been completed, there ends any intervention powers. So for instance, what happened in the Protect matter? You rightly pointed out that the CEO was paid a huge salary relative to the income of the company. So in that instance, this body, the TRP, has got no powers at all to intervene in the remuneration of directors. No powers at all. And in addition to that, what had happened during the course of a takeover, you pointed out that whether the shareholders were aware of the valuation of the company or not, they were clearly, the valuation was done by well-reputable company, corporate finance company, PwC. The valuation was in black and white, it was between X and Y on a rand for relu basis. The shareholders of that company chose not to accept the offer, knowing well what is the value of the company. Unfortunately, that deal, as most of these deals are, it was subject to a particular condition, one of the conditions that the shareholders, 50 plus 1%, must accept the offer before they could complete it. Now, the fact that less than 50% accepted the offer, it then meant that the bidder would walk away and cancel the deal, the takeover failed. And 1 year down the line, that resulted in the liquidation. Thank you, Minister.
The CIPIC, if you can address some of the issues.
Thank you, DDG. I think the Deputy Minister has touched on it, but I'll just elaborate on some stuff that we're doing regarding the abuse. The CIPC and in collaboration with the DCI have initiated a project to look at business rescue 3 years on, because we're 3 years into it now. We awarded the project to the University of Pretoria, and they're currently engaged for about possibly the last 2 months in speaking to business rescue practitioners, speaking to banks, speaking to post-commencement finance houses, and therefore they will conclude a report on that. Also, the Specialist Committee on Company Law, and I think it's in the presentation, will be hosting a two-day corporate law conference where some of the results of this business rescue on the second day will be presented. And I think it'll probably be a good idea, Madam Chair, to maybe share the report, the finalized report with the committee when we have it, and therefore we can possibly look at how some of the strengthening of the regulations around business rescue can also be achieved.
In regards to, I think some of the issues around the business rescue breakdown, I think we can send that information later on. But I just wanted to find out if there's anything you wanted to add, Agnes?
No, DDG, I've already responded to the issue around the Social and Ethics Committee. That was the only issue relating to the company's tribunal. Thanks.
Chair, just to sum up some of the issues, I think the issue around the how lawyers advise people is an interesting one, because I remember when I was working for the Competition Commission, we were providing advisory opinions dealing with very complex structures. We spent like days in meetings with the parties, which would be the lawyers and the companies. And we were charging 2,500 rands
for an advisory opinion. And when we look at the fees that the lawyers charge the client based on that advice, the fees were like significant fees. So we looked at it from a perspective of saying, at the same time, you don't want to raise the fee too much because you also want people to access advice from government agencies. You want the advice to be given so that companies can be assisted to comply with the legislation. But when we did our costing of that service as the Competition Commission at the time, we looked at it and we actually found that we spent about, per opinion, basically when we looked at everything that gets into that, about 50,000. Yes, when we did our own costing. So that then assists us to then say, when we look at the fees, then, you know, is the amount that we're charging reasonable? Can we up it a bit? But we then look at also who are the people that are accessing that service, because you also don't want to make it prohibitory for people that really need it, like smaller companies. But so it's an area that we've been working on. Like we're saying that it's entrepreneurship at the same time, but it's also businesses. But as government agencies, our drive is not really to make money, but to also just derive some cost for what we are doing, but not like, you know, like we're charging fees. So that has been very interesting that the honourable member has noted that. But we do encourage government agencies to provide opinions. Those are very useful to companies. It prevents a whole lot of problems that can happen after the fact. And how we use the advisory opinions is that as you issue them, you know, from a company to company, then you come up with a body of guidelines. Then you start issuing guidelines based on those advices that can guide everybody else so that they don't have to come to you for individual opinions again and again. So it's very useful for regulatory entities. Chair, I also just thought that I could just talk to just the issue around the 70%, 30% royalties that we pay with more going outside. Chair, it also depends, again, on how the industry is structured. That industry in South Africa, for instance, if you look at the recording companies, they're foreign. Yes, we do have like independent labels, but their survival is really neither here nor there. So one of the things that the minister committed to, which is currently in the process, is that we will create incentives to assist businesses in South Africa to create a music industry in the country. That requires capital from recording equipment and so forth. So you need to come with an intervention that will then actually build that industry. So there is a strategy that is being developed in the department. From a creative point of view, for creative industries like art and all of that, there's already a strategy that deals with that, and it's part of our IPEP. So that kind of support will help for us to have a South African industry. Then, therefore, issues of ownership. A song can be produced here in South Africa, but you find that it's produced under a company that is actually a foreign company. So that ownership is outside. So yes, the royalties will go outside. So those are some of the things that we are looking into to ensure that at some point we can achieve some equity. And like I say, Chair, these are the things that are actually in the IPEP. You'll see that IPEP has got a specific focus on intellectual property. That is why we're dealing with the issues of pharmaceuticals. That is why we're dealing with creative industries within IPEP, because those are the areas that we want to enhance. Chair, I was just looking if there's anything that would have missed, but I am not seeing anything. If there's anything, Chair, we will debrief with our parliamentary officer, and then we'll then ensure that you get that in writing.
DDG, thank you very much, and also to the team. But we'd also like to extend a special appreciation to yourself, Deputy Minister, for responding on the policy front, as it were, to these issues. Thank you very much. Well, we would like to point out to members here on, I think it is page 22, the Copyright Act, which was referred in passing at the Minister's first meeting with us, that this was going to be subject to review. And I think the key issues have been noted here. They've come up in the past one way or the other, and they do affect some of the issues that have been raised here again this morning, and we do need to take it more seriously. The other one is, notwithstanding us indicating all these constraints we've got about
the 7 million that directors can pull out, page 45. As a matter of fact, this committee has been quite concerned about these the pay, the directors' pay. This has been raised on various fronts, especially some of the highly capitalist countries have already put a stop to this. And when there's a reference made to a highly reputable company, let us never forget that Enron was the most reputable in the United States, and half its directors have only recently come out of jail. So I wouldn't, you know, it doesn't impress me when someone's described as reputable in this committee. Not at all. So what I want to see is that issue unpacked, and I'll decide how reputable that offer was. So I want it brought here in writing to us, that particular one of extra. They certainly did get extra, and then the Adcock Ingram as well. You see, we all study the paper, but if we're going to be expected to take our positions from the media, you needn't come here. We needn't have Parliament. This is Parliament, and we'll make up our own minds about what's happened. Let's get these raw facts here, and then we'll decide, as I said, about the reputation of people. On this other matter, we'd like all of these issues as soon as possible, and the reason being simple. We are closing tomorrow. I think we're meeting until probably 11, 11.30, and we really would have liked, if possible, to have had information out to members before they go to the PCOs. That's really the issue, more than anything else. One other thing that is worth pointing out, you see these runners that run across to SIPCO and so on. I don't know, they are there. As to whether they are charging, I wouldn't know, because I've never used a runner in my life. But they, I have raised this again in the last term, that we have a company saying to us, now look, the only way I can do this is by paying a runner. And then you say, give us the name of the runner. No, I can't do that, then I'll stop the way I get things done easy. So it is happening, so maybe it may be a good idea for you to employ a cameraman. I mean it. And do your own. What's that special program on TV that comes out and they call it, carte blanche? Become your own carte blanche and go and capture this. Because they're right outside your office. Probably from your own office window you could capture it. So look, let's not have nonsense about that one. These things must stop. They must. Because they get people who are not even the mainstream people, but they get those out of the mainstream and say, don't let it worry you, Umama. Let me see how I can help you. As he sees a winner. What? With R1,000? No. Hill Lewis has already told us. The mainstream. Yeah, but that's the mainstream. We've said the mainstream we already know about. They're paying fancy prices. Umama isn't paying fancy prices, but she's got the low-key runners. So there we are. They all paying this. But then they came here to Honourable Hill Lewis because they wouldn't like to pay it. That's as simple as that.
Chairperson, I'm told that the way they are so creative, they also call the commission and say, can we help you?
Yes.
To register the company quickly, so...
Stop. On the other thing about the, on the regulation side of things, I think that we do have to be aware that on the one side, we have to have a regulatory framework. We understand that. But at the same time, we also need to still facilitate people's innovation and creativity to move ahead. So it is a delicate balance that we're striking, and we appreciate you, Deputy Minister, re-emphasizing the need for balance as we go forward in this particular committee. But I would like to thank all the DTI members, thank you very much for being here and staying the course and not demanding to go on early flights, and the members as well. I would ask the members to remain behind for just 1 minute after we adjourn. Please, thank you.